Hey there, and welcome to Time to Lean, the podcast where you air your dirty laundry and we help you clean up your shit. I'm Crystal Britt.
And I'm Laura Danger. Think of us as your household secret weapon, taking your questions and voicemails to navigate the wild world of gender norms and household dynamics.
We dive headfirst into the nitty-gritty of how broader social issues impact our everyday lives.
So don't be shy, send us your dirty laundry.
And we'll help you clean up your shit.
This is Time to Lean. Welcome back, everybody. This is Laura Danger and Crystal Britt. We are coming at you today with a clip from a podcast. I don't know who these people are. A bunch of people know who these people are. I don't know. Probably should have looked them up. I've learned a little bit about them from the comments section. Do you have any context for them, Crystal?
I don't have any context for these people in particular. When before we started and you were saying that you had found, like, it was a clip, the guy was, like, associated with, like, The Real World or The Challenge. I was like, oh, I'm familiar with The Challenge as a reality show, but I don't know these people in particular, but reality show heads will know.
Is The Real World still a thing?
I don't think so. That's a really good question. I don't think so. No, because is MTV still a thing? I don't think MTV.
Yeah, I think it's still a thing. Yeah, it's still a thing because I don't know. Are there still Teen Moms and all that?
Oh, Teen Mom OG. Yeah, you know what? That must be real. Or it must still be. I know it's real. It must still be on air. I don't. Let me see. Did it star? Is it done? I mean, it says. Oh, it was on Facebook Watch until 2019. But
I don't know.
No, there are no new episodes of Real World. They're not. Okay. It's not a thing anymore.
Did you watch that?
Real World?
Yeah.
Yes. When I was, I don't know, I must have been mid-elementary, but I watched a couple of seasons.
I feel like it was The Real World versus Road Rules. It was like NSYNC versus Backstreet Boys.
Oh, for sure. It was like you, it was a very loyal fan base.
Yeah.
And it was like, first of all, Road Rules was just copying Real World. So get out of here. Road Rules sucked.
I agree. I'm with you.
This is why we would have been friends.
It didn't make sense. Like they kept trying to make it cool. I don't know.
Yeah. They tried to make it work. Yeah. They tried to make it work. And it was like, don't stop. Just do more seasons of Real World. It's fine. Yeah.
That was the segue into Love Island. When I got to watch Love Island, I was like, yeah. But wasn't it like Big Brother too was very.
Yeah, CBS was trying. CBS was trying their hardest to recreate the wheel. But yeah, Real World was very revolutionary culturally for a number of reasons. But The Challenge is like they do some of the same things where they like took different seasons of Real World and put them against each other. Some of them, I feel like my friend Christy is very into The Challenge. There are a lot of seasons on Paramount Plus, and there's different ways that they shook it up. So like when I have gone to Dallas to visit her, we'll just do like a marathon. And I get pretty into it. It's interesting. But yeah, it's still like The Challenge is a very big deal. So, among people who are into reality TV. So people will know who these two are, but I have no idea.
Okay, fantastic. All right, I'm going to share the clip. This clip went viral a while ago, like at least a year ago. And I made a comment on it a year ago. I just reposted it, which is why I thought about it. So we're going to listen to it here.
The first time you told me you were pregnant, what I said?
You went... What'd you say? Like, oh, fuck me.
Yeah, so.
I'm like, oh.
But it wasn't
I
like,
wanted to record it, too. I was like, oh, maybe he'll say something sweet. And like, thank God I didn't.
It wasn't even like it was not planned or anything. Like, we were like in, we actually were trying. And day one, she's like, oh, it didn't work. And I was like, yes. Yeah. 9 months to still be a kid or whatever. Or 1 month because, you know, the cycle or whatever. And then 2 days later, she comes in all excited. Like, this is talking like 9, 10 a.m. I'm working in my office and she's like, shows me the stick. I grab it. I'm like, oh, fuck me.
It was literally 2 days later.
Life starts again.
Oh, real nice. And I go, I don't know. I just mean there's like a 9 month countdown where I'm not allowed to be a kid anymore.
Right.
But I will say I'm still a kid and I don't have to do very much.
Yeah, like, she holds it down.
I'll tell you what, the one thing in the world that I couldn't do, because I could do anything, I couldn't be a mom.
No, none of us can.
No. That's the hard, that is one of the hardest jobs in the world. And I'm very lucky that I don't have to wake up at night to do anything. If she's home, I'm not changing poopy diapers unless like I'm in a really good mood or there's two at the same time. If there's two poopy diapers at the same time, I will do the male poopy diaper.
Right.
Because I know the plumbing better.
Jenna, can you just, you know, can you verify this or what?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And he'll let me know when they went to the bathroom, though. He'll be like, oh, man, he stinks. So I'm like waiting. Maybe Zach will change him. He's like, oh, he really stinks. I'm like, all right.
Hey, this diaper is disgusting. You might want to get to this one sooner than later. But no, that's the best part about being a dad is you're not the mom.
Yeah, you're not
the mom. You get to do all the fun stuff. You get to do all this awesome, see all these awesome things. But like at the same time, everyone's like, oh, how are the kids doing? Are they sleeping through the night? I'm like, I don't know.
Zach's like, I have great night's sleep every single night.
I get my sleep 5 hours. Boom. That's all I need. And it doesn't get interrupted. And except for on Saturdays.
Zach takes his blanket and pillow and goes downstairs on the couch while I'm dealing with two crying, screaming babies.
Dude, I'm the worst.
That's why kids love their mom. And that's why I'm a mama's boy for sure. And that's why your kids will both be mama's boy and girl.
Ah, they better, because I'm doing the worst.
Any reactions to that?
I mean, clearly he couldn't be a mom because he can't even be a dad. Here's what's bonkers about that is that I would imagine, like, you can tell by the way he says it and like at the beginning of like, oh, I could never be a mom. He feels like he's doing something. Like, he feels like he's giving her credit of like, oh, I could never do it. That shit's crazy. Like, you can feel like he feels like that's progress. Of like, I'm so enlightened because I'm giving her credit for how much she's doing.
Yeah. And like, what is wild to me is this is so blatantly misogynistic, antiquated. It's so ass backward. And he says it out loud. He says it kind of laughing and she kind of laughs too. And you can see she's like, I don't know. In my opinion, her face, she like wavers between being a little uncomfortable and kind of like sort of smiling, sort of lighthearted. But I feel like this is the situation where if anyone was to call him out, they'd either be like, no, he really is like, he's a great dad. Yeah. Or they'd be like, y'all are a bunch of idiots. Don't you know that he was joking? It's a joke.
It's a joke. Get it?
Yeah. But it doesn't seem like a joke.
I mean, it's definitely not a joke that she is having these experiences and bonding with her kid and with her kids. That was the other thing I didn't understand. Do they have twins? Is that the situation?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, my God. You missed the balloons when I did this.
Awesome. Yeah. for anyone who's not watching, Apple has built-in video recognition. And so when you do a thumbs up or a peace sign or put your hands in the air, it reacts.
Now imagine being a therapist who does mostly telehealth. And when I say, do you have two kids? You have two kids and then balloons just up behind me. It's great. Yeah. That having that, the defensiveness like is very, we've talked about this before, but she has three kids. Like, that's not, you have, or two kids and a grown dependent. Like, that's not, what are we?
Well, and he admits it. And that's what drives me bananas. And actually, early 2020, before I got on TikTok, part of what started me going viral, I started going viral because I was watching all of this stuff on Instagram. You know, the pandemic made every inequity just like glaringly obvious.
Yeah.
And everybody was on Instagram and on their stories, like sharing stuff.
Oh, I had never thought about that. But yeah, everybody was chronically online because that's all we had to do.
Yes. And suddenly it was like so in my face and stark. And I had already been sort of like several months into a very, very serious journey of trying to disrupt inequity in my home. Mm-hmm. So I was like very acutely angry. It was very angry.
Sure.
And I was seeing it in my household. I was seeing it online. And there was this one guy, he was a real a-hole during the George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, like the protests that were happening in Chicago, mm-hmm. he was very boldly, he was doing some inappropriate stuff online and in our neighborhood group. And I like clicked on his profile and he had made a post and he was like, thank you to the best wife in the world. They had four kids and he was like, you have five kids to raise and it's blah, blah, blah. And was just like, we, our entire lives would literally fall apart without you. You do everything for us. I was like, you,
like, it's a crazy level to own that.
Yeah.
To be like, because you have to, like, to, in order to own that and be able to, like, with your whole chest, post that online and, like, say that is, I also, like, and I'm not changing anything about that.
No.
Like,
no.
That is fine and appropriate for her to have, for her to parent five children, one of which is me, the grown man.
Think- You have talked to me about this before because there's that Christian women's comedian who hosts like women's nights out. And the joke is that. It's like, how many, everybody tell me right now, ladies, this is supposed to be your night out. Tell me, how many texts have you gotten from your husband? Read them out. What are they? And she goes within, to the audience.
Like, within the first like 5 minutes of her set, right? Which is the point of like, how many texts have you already gotten?
Mm-hmm. And we've talked about that, right? Where that is a really, I feel like essential, or you were telling me maybe a really essential part of the identity of being in role.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
can you say more about that?
Yeah. I mean, to an extent. And I think I should like throw this caveat in here as well, because my sister was texting me earlier this week that was like, hey, I wonder how much your neurodivergence played into how you like were raised within evangelical Christianity and what you internalized versus what you didn't. And I was like, that's actually a really good point. So I will say this is coming from like my neurodivergent perspective, mm-hmm. being an undiagnosed girl in that culture. But it's especially in motherhood, like, that is like a core part of your identity, not only because it's what I'm trying to think of how to say it, not just because of like this is a role that you fulfill, but like this is your God-given role. This is your mm-hmm. God-given, like I would say they would argue it's like a biological like role that you have to meet in order, like because you are a woman. This is where you're like, you are, I have read books before by different Christian female authors that are like the mom controls the mood of the whole house. So if you are in control, like if you don't have a solid, if you are not grounded and peaceful and calm and that kind of a partner and mother, you are dysregulating your whole home. Like you are the keeper of the home. That is your job. And it was not specified between, it was heavily implied that like, if you can stay at home, like, of course that's the best option. But if you can't stay at home, like these are still like your duties. And even if you work outside of the home, this is still your realm because men don't know how to do it. Like men are not wired to do it. That's what it was.
Yeah. That's the part that really bothers me is the fact that it's considered like God-given or natural or biological. I just, God's yucks best me plan. Out.
That's what it is. It's like, well, this is God's best for you, right? Like this route is God's best for each of you. The man is the spiritual head of the household. He drives, you know, he's like the final authority in the house of, which is, sounds more legalistic and authoritarian than it usually plays out because it's usually more subtle than that, right? Where it's like, well, you guys can have discussions about like how you make decisions, but like, the man is in charge of how his household turns out. So that's where you come under the like the umbrella structure that we see like in the documentary about the Duggars, right? That's a very real, like I've seen that.
Okay, describe it. Describe it for anybody who hasn't seen it.
Sure. So the diagram is an old diagram used from like a very like authoritarian, what is it? IFB. It's a very fundamentalist concept of like, everyone is under authority, God being their umbrellas. It's a series of like three or four umbrellas where the top umbrella is God. Underneath that umbrella is the husband. Underneath that umbrella is the wife. And underneath that umbrella is the children. Right. So the idea is like the wife is underneath not only the husband's like the husband's authority, but is also ultimately under God's authority. Mm-hmm. And the husband is under God's authority. Ultimately, he is not under any obligation to listen or respect or, but it's subtly implied, right? Again, like I say, it's like a message that's packaged and sold of like, this is God's best plan. This is the natural role. This is why you guys get into these arguments is because men are more naturally inclined to not provide care for changing diapers. Why would he change a diaper? He's better at math. So he's going to be in charge of finances. Right. And like, well, if you, you know, it was very much the thing of like, well, I got to talk to my husband about that.
Yeah. The more you say that, the more interesting, like if that's the case that men are more capable of making decisions in the household and the things that they excel at are more important, then of course, like there's obviously we don't care about the care work or the emotional regulation. And of course, we definitely don't care about the rights of children.
Oh, yeah, and no.
So I was writing about this like all last week, trying to figure out how to wrap my head around this. But I was talking to Mickey Kendall. Mm-hmm. And Mickey Kendall and I were talking about like, what is wrong? What is wrong with society? Why do we feel like we don't have a village? And what she said was, we have a society that ultimately doesn't want us to have kids. And isn't set up for us to have kids. They want us to give birth and create life, but really they just want future workers. So she was, you know, she was talking about like, and actually Ashley Simpo, when I talked to her, said something very similar, which is like, you know, you fix the moms and you fix society.
Mm.
And when I hear something like that, or when I am thinking about, a society that's set up for children or for mothers, what I'm really hearing is like care. Like the most vulnerable are taken care of. Children are vulnerable. They rely on us for care, domestic work, food, shelter, everything. So if we had a society that was set up to actually provide for that, we would have a society that cared about humanity.
And you want to know what's absolutely bonkers about fundamentalism?
What?
Like being under that umbrella and like coming from like a Christian perspective, what you just described is what all of Jesus's ministry and all of the scripture referring to the prophecy of his birth and what he was going to do is exactly what you just described. Like protecting the vulnerable, taking care of the widow and the orphan and women and children, like the most vulnerable of society. That is the, like, those are the prophecies that he was born to fulfill, according to Christianity. So it's like the call is coming from inside the house. Hello. Like it's that wild. Is how you know when a system has been completely corrupted by power rather than believing in its own message, because you're exactly right. Like if a system, which is also crazy, because if a society were geared toward protecting the vulnerable and the most marginalized of us, like everybody benefits from that.
Yes. Yes.
Right. There's not a winner and a loser, which I never understood growing up. Right. Like understanding like welfare as a concept, me being like, yeah, that sounds good. And then everybody being like, oh, well, here's why. No, I actually, you would think that, right? Actually, here's why it's bad. And I'm like, okay, I don't, you know what I mean? Where it's like the simplest answer is usually the one that is the correct answer. So it's just, it's very strange. That's really interesting.
Yeah. I thought that, I mean, I've been thinking about that so much lately. And I'm reading Disability Intimacy, edited by Alice Wong. And I think so many of the people who have written essays in that, and like people in the disability justice world, Mia Mingus talk. And I mean, who did I just, Miriam Kaba. She's awesome. An incredible activist and educator, and organizer, I should say, organizer. We do this till we free us. Do this till we free us. The author of that, like, it just comes back to if we provided for the basic needs for everybody and if everybody could thrive, we would all thrive. Like,
yep.
It's so interesting to hear that there is literal imagery and that is taught so explicitly, this hierarchy of what labor and what rights and things like that are valued. Like,
yep.
How it doesn't make sense with what it means to exist.
No, it doesn't. Which I would also argue in a clinical sense, like in the therapeutic world, is where a lot of people, particularly men who have not been taught that, who have not been taught the value of care or that it is okay for them to care or emote or feel like, that's how people end up in mental health crises, right? Is because they don't have that, whether or not you believe in the concept of a soul or it's strictly cognitive in our brain chemistry, right? Or the connections that we make neurologically, you don't have that component. So you can't live out the full, like the full experience of existing as a human person, because you don't have the ability or the skill to allow yourself to provide care or yourself to be cared for. Like there is a huge mental health cost related to that.
It's interesting that you say that, because in some ways this conversation also does say that a lot of men in this situation, in this structure, this umbrella structure, or the man in the podcast, are saying that they are deserving of care. In fact, they're entitled to it.
Yeah, that's very different.
And that's like the transactional view, yes. And like, you owe this to me because I have given you this other thing. And what is like, when I read Braiding Sweetgrass, it really, so much of the imagery, like, so Robin Wall Kimmerer in Braiding Sweetgrass, just like essay after essay after essay, continues to hammer home the fact that the most natural thing we can do is be reciprocal and like participate at our capacity, not beyond it, not underneath it. It's like not about greed. It's about showing up with what you have. And like, she tells the story of the strawberry plant. And she's like, she picks the strawberry because it's a gift that she knows her father likes. She goes into the field with her sister and she knows where the wild strawberries grow. She can smell them when they're ready. They're ripe. They've been nurtured by the ground. She goes and she weeds the area. She makes sure that the earth is, you know, tended to. She never takes too much, because if you take too much of a plant, it won't come back. And she gives the gift freely. Gifts are given freely. They're, you know, you shouldn't be expecting something back. That's going to the grocery store and buying strawberries.
Right.
Whereas like gift giving and reciprocity is, you wouldn't expect a child to give you the same thing. Like there is just no back and forth that's equal or even. And people like this guy, who I'm going to use him as like an archetype. They are like, okay, but I do this thing, and so you should do this thing. And it's so reductive and inhumane.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's so interesting that you should say that, because I was just having a conversation this week about how to split finances, right? Like within a household, and talking about what is equitable versus what is equal, and how at the end of the day, it's also like, yes, I understand like the concept of like when we bring money into a relationship, there are power dynamics at play. There are like the ways that we grew up and understood money and how money was treated in our families. We bring all of that baggage to the table. But where I encourage couples to start is by humanizing each other, of like, what is the end goal? You're feeling a discomfort from these dynamics and this power. What are you trying to do? You're trying to reconnect to your partner and get on the same page so that it doesn't feel inequitable, so that you don't feel weird or icky or like gross about it. So let's like focus on that, right? Like, because you're exactly like you said, it's dehumanizing for an adult to expect, or not even to expect, but to assume or demand that care one way. Like you said, like to view care as something that is commodified, it like, I feel like is so gross.
Yes. Okay. And another really interesting thing. I want to say Mia Mingus came up with, there's a quote that Mia Mingus has about how intimacy is like not nudity. Like when you are disabled and you have care workers who you rely on for certain basic needs, including bathing and changing your clothes and things like that, there's a reframe that happens. And they refer to it as crip wisdom, which is like intimacy looks a lot of different ways. And this, in my head, it like crosses with what Angela Chen writes about in Ace.
In Ace, yes.
And it's like, what is love and intimacy? It's nurturing. It's being in public and seeing somebody who maybe has a similar disability visually, you can see, or even that your identities, racial, gender, like things like that, when you can identify just quickly, oh, yep, like I get you, I see a part of you and I'm witnessing you, that can be intimacy. There's an essay about, it's like an ode to the times of the mask. And it's like, when I see you in public and you wear a mask and all I see is your eyes, that is an intimate connection, because people who are still masking in public or in crowded spaces or whatever, there's a connection there of knowing somebody.
Yeah.
So yeah, these different kinds of intimacies and nurturing and things like that. And they talk about how it gets muddy with a paid care worker because there is a line you have to draw about is it real intimacy? It depends. It completely depends.
Right. Depends upon context. Depends upon. Yeah. Yep.
It's just such an interesting way to look at it. And you and I talk about it a lot, but like, I think it's so interesting to learn about justice through the lens of disability.
Yeah.
And then thinking about, I mean, you just got an autism diagnosis and myself, I've been processing a lot of, mental health stuff. Hi, Mom. I think you listened to this, but like, I was visiting her recently and I saw like, there were some like notes and stuff and she was going through emails. I had written her emails as a teenager at the peak of, I was using drugs and I was full blown alcoholic as a teenager. And very, undiagnosed, mentally ill now, you know, finding out bipolar too. And like reading what I said, which was so unhinged. I don't know if that's the proper term. I don't know.
I still say unhinged.
It was. I could very mad. That's the disability justice word of the day is mad. Yeah. I was mad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's just like being able to accept that that's reality and we all deserve to be seen and known and be messy and weird and all of the things. And it's, I don't know. The more I get in that space and learn about myself, it's great. So liberating.
Yeah, it is very liberating. I'm reading Constellations of Care. That's a book put out by Pluto Press, which has incredible, incredible books to offer. But it's similarly like talking about how important care work is, right? Because of those, like, just seeing it through different lenses, I think, like you're describing, seeing it through like the disability justice lens, seeing it through this book is my first venture into anarcho-feminism, which I think is how you pronounce it, which is so interesting because it's like it's all radical care work and it's changing the way we understand collective liberation and what care means. And it elevates what happens in the home when a stay-at-home mom is providing care for her kids. Like that's fucking like in the trenches work. Like that work is so valuable. It's difficult to describe. So when this guy is like putting off like, or, you know, making like very light of like changing poopy diapers, like I literally want to be like, fuck you. Do you have a soul? Right. Like that, that over, like, again, that archetype of like, devaluing that work so little that it's like I feel bad for him that he doesn't even understand how much he's missing out on, like legitimately robbing his soul and his personhood of the importance of that work.
Right.
That's it's bonkers to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's like that's the really wonderful shift, as I feel like every time I talk about this and I'm like, oh, I see a shift happening, I'm like, it's probably just me. It's probably a bunch of fucking white ladies
being like, oh, did you guys know? And it's like, yeah, God,
yeah.
The black and brown women have known that.
Yep.
Okay.
I mean, I'm enlightened. And I'm just going to keep bringing it back to all I've learned from, like, it's QT BIPOC, queer, trans, it's black, indigenous, people of color, multiply marginalized people, disabled people, because the systems don't give a fuck. And bell hooks says it in multiple books, basically is like the women, the feminists who are like, just burn it down, do it all women group, just like the exclusionary part, or just being like, divorce your husbands, that's the solution,
right?
Is like, okay, yeah, like, you know, Crystal and I fully support you leaving your husband.
No, like, fully leave him, that sounds great. And
and there are so many people who have never been able to rely on just being solo, just like, oh yeah, I will just be on my own, I will just, yeah, I'll go, you know what, I'll get public services or whatever, like, those haven't been available to people. Did you know that maybe this is new to somebody who's listening, if you get out of jail, you lose access to public resources, which is so fucked, because who needs support? People who have just been
who are formally incarcerated.
But yeah, I think it's really fascinating. And it's, like you said, very sad for somebody who is so proudly disconnected from, and the other guy who is like, that's going to be a mama's kid. Yeah. Yeah. That is how you nurture a connection.
Where it's like, yeah, I really hope that cycle is not perpetuated for another generation. That's wild. Said with your whole chest.
Well, and they just had another baby, by the way.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. I'm sure since this was recorded, he has read and learned a ton, listened to a lot of podcasts, and I'm sure he's on a different path. I'm sure that there is not going to be another video that circulates of how uninvolved he is.
No, definitely not. Before we got into this deep dive into care work, I did want to mention that in 1982... 43% of dads said that they had never, ever changed a diaper. And by 2000, that number was 3%. I wonder
by
what
2000,
it is for
the year 2000?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then in 2010, similar study said that 65% of men helped, air quotes, a great deal with diaper changes.
Can you describe to me, Laura, how you picture helping with diaper changes, what that looks like?
So you had a funny reaction to this. First of all, I want to say that a very common annoyance, maybe I'm calling Jack out on this. I've done it too. I did this a lot. When the other partner, when somebody else helps out, pitches in, does their part, changes a diaper, and then leaves it.
Oh, yeah. I did that all the time.
Yeah. I was about to call Jack out.
There.
I did it. Yep.
Yeah.
I did it constantly. But sometimes,
oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
It would just sit there.
Yep.
And so, like, that's kind of what I think of when I think helping out is like, oh, yeah, I'll just like do a little part of it while you're busy. And then you can come jump back in.
I'll bring you a diaper.
Yes.
I'll go throw it away. I'll bring you the diaper paste.
You thinking of? What did you picture?
Yeah, where it's like, well, first of all, you got to love researchers who, like,
I
mean,
wonder,
my, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, I was like, I, you know I say this all the time, but I wonder what the gender of these researchers were that did this research project that were like, well, these men help out quite a bit.
Men help so much more. Oh, come on.
They help out a lot. They help out. They do a lot to help out. Like, because, and the reason I make fun of that is not to discredit men who are doing research about care work. Like, that's great. What I am calling attention to is the lack of attention to detail of, like, imagine you are a mother and you are the one who primarily gets, like, societally, culturally gets stuck with changing the diapers. And someone says to you, oh, I'll help out with changing a diaper. Like, you're going to look at them and go, what would you like to help with? Would you like to hold the feet while I wipe the baby's butt? Like, what are you talking about? Help me do. This is a 5-minute task that legitimately requires one person to do it. Like, I don't understand. You're in the way if you're helping.
Yeah.
So it's just like helps out a great deal. Could we be very specific about that? 64% of fathers report playing with their kid, you know, outside for more than 1 hour a day or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, 64% of fathers report engaging one-on-one with their kid for 30 minutes or more without their partner. You know what I mean? Like, per day. That would be much more valuable information than, like, they help out a great deal. Yeah, they do their part a lot. Like,
okay. I help. Come on.
What do you mean I don't help? I help all the time.
There is data. I have to dig into my bookmarks for it. But there is data about how parents spend their childcare time.
Mm.
And the data, like, just trust us on this. The data says that the majority of time that men have increased the hands-on time with their kids has been playing. Like, that's the majority of the time. And I mean, we knew that. It's not the clipping of the nails and the booking of the appointments and cleaning out the ears and all that stuff.
Which, hear me out, that's great. Like, cater to strengths. Yeah. Like, I totally get it. I have two kids who right now who are very, very highly sensory seeking, which means they constantly want me to play with them. They are constantly like, would you want to wrestle? And I'm like, absolutely not. Wrestling is the most torturous activity I can ever think of because everyone always ends up hurt, which they're fine with. But if I engage, I'm the one who ends up getting hurt. It's too loud. I don't want, no. So Ben does that with them. He excels in gross motor and all at like reaction times and all of that shit. He can do that. I can't do that. But he also does bath time, knows what medications the kids need in the morning and at night. Like, playing is great.
Mm-hmm.
And let's not only, designate that area to the only thing that dads are good for.
Let me also, I want to shout out Ben for a minute. Because when you all were visiting, I effed up. I think
I'm scared.
I already talked about this, I think, on here. I effed up with the babysitter and booked. I didn't communicate clearly. She thought she was supposed to come at 9 p.m. and I thought she was going to come at 9 a.m. and we had a 10 o'clock thing. And so the time ticked away and I had two children and nobody to watch them. And Ben had three children in a city he had never been to.
And that he was very cold in.
Yeah.
To be clear. He was freezing to death, basically.
And, well, I mean, actually, that is an interesting piece of the puzzle because it was not super warm. And he had only just met my children. And he took four kids in a city he did not know to a park across the street. We kept three.
Oh, that's right. We kept one. One wanted to stay. I forgot. One was old enough to engage in the workshop.
But he took them, and I fully believe that a parent who doesn't trust that they could tend to a child in need would not feel comfortable doing that because he is – I mean, he's fully capable on his own, 100% fully capable. And also, it is hard for anybody to do parenting on their own. So like, I don't, that's not even a related thing, but I just want to like shout out to Ben because personally that would have stressed me the fuck out.
That's very kind. I will say I was very proud that he did that. Like 3 years ago, there's no way he would have done that. Mm-hmm. Like, if I had asked him, I would have been like, don't, like, if it's not going to work, that's fine. On the DL, just tell me no. I'm not comfortable doing that. And he was like, oh, no, for sure. Like, I could totally do that. Right? Where he was like, and they had a great time.
They did.
They had such a fun time. It was it was a new park. So everybody was excited. But it was so nice to be able to, like, where it was like, I don't need to, I mean, you and I both, it was like, we don't need to text him. He came back, like, when the workshop was wrapping up. There was no need to check in, watch over, worry about where it was like, oh, God, like, we'll see how this goes. It was like, no, he's got it. Like, he's good.
Yep. Yeah. It's very cool.
Wild. It was very cool.
Well, and that's the other thing is, like, the podcast host who interviews this guy from the clip that we showed, who is like, your children are going to be a mama's kid. The reason, it's not always, because I know, like, this is not a hard and fast rule, but I do think it contributes to children who go to their primary caregiver, not only because they, like, have an established relationship and a flow with them or for a million other reasons, but also because they can trust them to care.
Yeah.
And to do a good job. Mm-hmm. And it's really, like, you notice it, and mm-hmm. kids notice it, and they pick up on who they can go to for certain things.
And I have heard of court cases, right, in divorce where the, you know, if it's left up to mediation or the, you know, the mediator to stand for the kids and say, this is what the kids want, right? Like, that plays to custody, right? Of, like, the kids know what each parent does and which one will get their needs met, like, very young, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's, they know who is dependable and who knows the skills that they need, who knows how to do hair, who knows what I wear, who knows what I eat, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they know who does that. And so it's not inconsequential.
No, it's a big deal. And I really can't stand this rhetoric about when people like this man are so unapologetic about not being involved, it does such a disservice. I mean, we both have partners who from the get-go are very involved caregivers. And the more we've talked and learned about this, have, like, you know, jumped on board.
Yep.
But I also have known, I just know so many men like that. Both of my brothers are like that. Like, mm-hmm. and you have a brother who's like that.
Mm-hmm.
And just, like, takes caregiving and connection with their children very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Single fathers, tons of single dads who, I mean, I know a fantastic he was a single father. He's remarried. So his kid has a stepmom, but he got sole custody. He is not even just, like, a little bit better at it. He's an absolutely fantastic father.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For the same way any parent
mm-hmm.
should be. Or try, you know.
Right.
And try.
And, right. Try to be. Right. And to your point, right, like, it's so interesting to me that it's like, because there's care work is a skill.
Mm-hmm.
Care work is a skill set. It's not inherent. It's not wired in, you know, women. It's that thing. There was when we were still, like, ensconced, entrenched in evangelical culture, you know, daddy daughter dances are, you know, something that churches still do. And or, like, daddy daughter nights or whatever. Our church had one. My Ben took our then, I think she was like four or five-year-old daughter, our oldest. And the one thing I was struck by that I haven't seen repeated at subsequent daddy-daughter dances, which I thought was so, I was struck at the time. And now looking back to, I'm like, that was great. Was that they set up a ribbon station of, like, fabric, strips of fabric, and taught the dads how to braid. And I was like, that's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
That's better than here's the corsage station. Come pick your corsage up and put it on your daughter. Like, it was very against that gender essentialism, which you didn't see very often, especially back then, let alone in an evangelical church. So, like, stuff like that where I'm like, yeah, that's great. Give that to dad so that they have, like, if they are interested and engaged and curious and want to engage in that, give them a spot to do that. Mm-hmm. Like, here are the tools and resources to be able to do something like that. And I know that those exist.
Totally unrelated.
Absolutely. I'm here absolutely. For a tangent. Do it. Absolutely. Go. I'm in it.
I have been cutting my own hair.
the neurodivergent thing of I don't want to pay for it. I can't justify it. I could probably learn it in 10 minutes is what landed me in a hairdresser's chair 2 weeks ago to be like, can you color correct this fucking mess? I don't feel like a person. And I need your help. And texting her and being like, sorry, I ignored your text for 3 days. I have ADHD and I got really embarrassed that I tried to fix it on my own. And she was like, oh, my wife has ADHD. You're fine. You're safe here. And I was like, so sorry. Go ahead. Yeah. Yes. In it. Well, on board. Go.
And usually it's like I tried to fix it and then I try to fix it again.
I could probably hold on. Let me look up one more YouTube video. I could probably do it.
But my kids have like straight across bangs haircuts.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I've always trimmed their bangs. And it's so funny. Like my husband so lovingly cracks up because he'll come home periodically and be like, did you cut your hair? and then inevitably he'll see the kids and he'll be like, hair looks so cute.
Oh.
he would never let them. It's ben, like in the ben most would, ben would loving.
Come, Ben would come home and go, "Is it a rough day? Is it a rough day today?" If he came home and my hair was clearly cut and all the kids' bangs were trimmed, he'd be like, "How was your day?" I am sure I did that more than once during lockdown. Because I bought a set of clippers. I had, like, that's when I did the, I actually had an undercut at that point. But it was like, he'd come home and be like, how was your day long? You have a long day? Because everybody's hair was, I was like, no, why? Why are you asking?
No. Oh, we can't go anywhere because of the fucking pandemic that will never end. I'm going, yeah, no.
My world's on fire. How about yours?
Yeah. No, and what's really sweet is both of my children embrace the home haircut. Like, they like it and I like it, and big kids got like really long hair now, but these really cute straight across baby bangs, and she's like, mom, can we shake them up a little? She like shakes them. She's like, I want them to be a little wacky. Like, so man, cute.
You got it.
You
hold
absolutely.
On I saw this technique on YouTube. Hold on,
let me get the thinning cut shears. It up. Yeah, I bought them at Sally's.
We absolutely have hair cutters and like hair cutting scissors. Up. Don't touch those. Those are my hair cutting. Those are my mania scissors. Put them over there. And then thinning scissors. When I went in to have Izzy fix my hair, she goes, yeah, I just like trimmed it up a little bit. It was a little bit like wonky on one side. And I was like, I think that's weird. I don't know why. Like clear, very meat cut to me in the mirror with like four ponytails watching a Paul Mitchell hairdresser, like, and then you're gonna chop it here. I cut off like 3 inches and apparently part of it was wonky. Whatever, I'm fine. We're all fine.
We're fine.
Definitely it's not understimulated fine. It's fine.
That's so funny. All while eating candy and listening to it, three different audiobooks
while I'm watching something on TV. Yes. Yeah. I do three screens, you know, it was a little treat.
And just like picking your fingers, all of it.
Picking my scalp.
Woo. Yep.
While I'm wearing my loops, yelling at Ben. No, I'm fine. No, I'm not irritable. Why are you asking? It's so good. Oh, hanging on by our newly trimmed fingernails. Freshly trimmed fingernails. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Jack was going to do my, he's going to learn highlights. And he's like, what if we mess it up? I was like,
and you were like,
we'll cut it. We'll cut it
100%. Like, did you look at him and go, did you forget you were talking to me for a second?
Clippers, hats. We got this.
I tell every hairdresser when I go in, they're like, what kind of cut do you want? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, you know, whatever you think will look good. Like, and they're like, so nervous. And I'm like, you don't understand. I've had like 3 bad haircuts in my whole life, like from birth. And like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like if I don't like, I'll just go, I'm like low key, I'm just going to go home and cut it all off.
Right,
so like,
right. I'll fix it.
I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit. I'm in this chair because I didn't have anything to do today. And I know you'll blow dry it at the end, so I'll feel good about myself for 30 minutes. So just go ahead and do that. You know what? Just blow dry it. Maybe that's all I want.
Uh-huh. Perfect.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
What were we talking about?
I don't know.
Diapers.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. As always, go follow us on Instagram if you're not. And give us a rating because it helps other people find us. And that's really cool. We appreciate you so much.
We love doing this. We loved getting feedback from the form that Laura posted in her stories a couple days ago because it meant so. We know how much time it takes to fill something like that out, and we so appreciate it. And it's so, so valuable. We're working on implementing some of it already. So thank you guys so much for following us and engaging on all the platforms and all the things.
Yeah, I will actually add. It's like an anonymous feedback form. If you want to tell us what you like, what you don't like, what we can improve on, what formats work, what doesn't. Can you all shut up about your hair?
can you guys stop talking about the shit you DIY because you're bored? Jesus.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Time to Lean. Your questions and stories are what keep us going, so keep those voicemails and messages coming.
Until our next episode, remember that you can always find us on social media and, of course, in your podcast feed. You can also subscribe for $5 a month on Spotify for uninterrupted episodes and bonus content.
We're so grateful for your support. See you next time.